It's hour number two of the Fan Evening Show on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. I'm Jack Hillgrove, taking you up until the nightly sports call tonight at 10:35. Talking Steelers, of course. The black and gold are 5-2. They go from 70s throwbacks to color rush on Monday night against the Giants. One of the best young scribes in the biz joining us from PennLive.com, Nick Faribault. Good to have you on, Nick. Thoughts on the gray face masks on Sunday night? I tweeted that they should stay. I don't think they will, but I thought that it looked good on the 70s throwback uniforms. What's up, man?
Yeah. I'm doing well. I really like the gray face mask. I think they make the color scheme pop. I really like them. I know it's like really subtle, but honestly, like it contours really well against the black and gold. I mean, if it were up to me, the block numbers should just be their uniforms, period. Yeah. I really do think that they're the best uniforms they have. I get the new modern aesthetic, but the Steelers haven't really changed their uniforms in a while anyways. So, I mean, I wouldn't hate the full implementation of those. We'll see. Color rush this weekend, though. I'm not a huge fan of the color rush.
You're not.
That's probably an unpopular opinion. I'm not.
They're fine for me. Like when all the teams unveiled the color rush jerseys back when they were like called color rush and it was like a branding thing, they were definitely better than the Rams yellow. I think it was, remember when the Rams and the Bucks played and it was like all red versus all yellow and it looked like ketchup and mustard?
Yes.
But it was better than that. It was better than the orange Dolphins ones that they had, but I didn't think that they were the better of the one, like best of the color rush. Middle of the pack for me.
Yeah, I think they're just, I don't know. The Steelers color rush aren't different enough from their normal uniforms, and it's just very derivative of the normal uniform and kind of worsens what is already very good. Like, if the next time, if they do another color rush like thing, I want the Steelers as alternates just be completely different. Like, a full-on gold uniform or something. Like, I wanted to see an experiment with it. Like, I don't even know if a full-on gold uniform would look good, but it's something I want to see.
I hear you. To the game on Sunday night, your grade for Russell Wilson?
I would say probably an A-. And I think he did a really good job doing a lot of things. I thought he managed the pocket well. Only took one sack. Didn't make any turnover-worthy plays. I'm a little worried about the arm strength. I'm not going to say the arm is gone because it's one game, and I saw in practice, I think, over the summer where the arm was there. I mean, Jack, you were there. I don't think we came out of Latrobe having concerns that Russ's arm wasn't there. But I thought when I watched a few of these practices that, you know, he had the deep ball and everything. And then I watched this game, and I said, oh, some of these balls are dying. Like, some of them are dying towards the sideline. He had a throw to Calvin Austin that should have been a touchdown that just died in front of him. Like, when he did not have his feet set and could drive, I didn't think he had, like, any off-platform power in his arm. And I was, like, that was a bit concerning to me. And I thought a lot of the deep balls, like, some of the deep balls that he had to Pickens were kind of really underthrown. I didn't think he necessarily were elite throws, but I thought he gave him chances, which is, I think, really good. I thought he made really good reads. I thought he hit the guys. He minimized negativity. He made some plays that shouldn't have been there. I thought the big play to Pat Freiermuth that went for 30 yards was largely made by him. He operated pretty clean. I thought it was a pretty good game for him. I'm just pointing out that fact because I'm a little worried about it. Does he have the velocity to fit into tight windows anymore? I think that's going to be the question there. We know, like Justin Fields has like the complete opposite thing. Like, Justin Fields only throws frozen ropes. He has no idea what touch is. And Russ has a ton of loft on his stuff. It's just, can he drive the ball? I think it's not if he can get it far. It's as he has the speed and the velocity to get it there. I was just a little concerned by some of the things we saw. But again, he's missed a lot of time and the calf is still a thing. So I'm willing to give it a few weeks, of course. And I think we saw him knock off some of the rust throughout the game. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, the struggles early on to me, I thought were totally rust. You could attribute it to that. So the PM guys played a clip from Steve Palazzolo of PFF on the show today, talking basically poo-pooing Russell Wilson's performance entirely and saying a lot of those throws were entirely on George Pickens. What would you, how would you respond to that? Because when I hear that, I think that throw on the Pickens touchdown was almost as perfect as it could get. Now, he didn't have to air it out 50-plus yards down the field, but the touch on it I thought was perfect, and to me, I think you got to give Russ a little bit more credit than what he was talking about.
I think Russ's touch is really good. I thought the placement was behind George. If he puts it out in front of him, it's probably easier, but I don't know. I think that's kind of taking a super derivative angle to this, where like everything, you can't not give Russ credit for a few things. For one, he is willing to give George those chances. I think the loft he has on his balls, the fact that he has loft and touch is a very important thing in and of itself. Like, it's very important because George Pickens is an elite ball tracker. He also threw like an absolute dime to Freiermuth on that. Freiermuth's catch was a perfect ball. I mean, I don't think he could have put that any better. But like, he had a lot of good throws with loft. I think he made good reads. The biggest thing was that he didn't take a ton of sacks. I thought he bailed out of pockets early, but as the game went on, I thought he didn't do that. I think he made plays that weren't there at times. So, I mean, I understand the concern. I just think that's a little overreactionary. And yes, like, George Pickens made a ton of plays that helped Russ out. But also, Russ is throwing it to 14 for a reason. Yep. I mean, there's a reason you throw it up to 14. There were guys open on some of the targets to George that would have been wide open passes that Russ could have made. And he just went to him anyways. And I'm not going to fault him for that. I'm just saying. There's like the pass interference before the half. Calvin Austin would have had like a 40-yard touchdown if Russ had actually done, you know, the full scan field thing. He was locked in on George. Again, I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I'm just saying. So, like, I get it. Like, I think there's definitely some concern of if Russ has that arm there. Like, is Russ's arm dead or not? Like, you remember Ben in 2020 where that was like, is Ben's arm gone? Like,
yeah,
that's going to be the question. But we'll see. I don't know. Russ is 36 and coming off a calf injury. And again, like, when I watched his deep balls in the summer, like, I did not say, oh, his arm's dead. Like, even in the summer in 2021, when you saw Ben, you were like, yeah, his arm's gone. Like, it's just not there anymore. I didn't say that with Russ this summer. So we'll see. I'm guessing part of it might be a footwork issue where maybe he's not putting full drive into his front foot because it was his front leg. It was his drive leg that had the calf injury. And so I'm wondering if he's not trying to take some off there and maybe not trying to put everything into it just yet. And it's about getting confidence back in his leg. I think that might be something to look at too.
Nick Faribault covers the Steelers for PennLive.com. I believe it was Brian Batko who asked Tomlin after the game on Sunday about if he considered throwing Justin Fields in on sub packages, and he said he hadn't. I believe that came up again with Tomlin today in the weekly presser. Do the Giants, do you think, present anything defensively where we could see Justin Fields in some sort of fashion on Monday Night Football?
If they're so scared in the red zone that they can't run the ball through Dexter Lawrence, I think that's the big thing. And they're just going to kind of rely upon Justin's athleticism to get to the edges. I think that might be something. Outside of that, I think, you know, Justin's specific QB run game stuff, it really shows up. It'll show up in specific matchups. I'm not sure this is one where they can't run the ball with just their run game and, I don't know, maybe a Russ Reed option or two and be fine. But I think the biggest thing would be if they think in the red zone that Lawrence and Burns are going to destroy them. And if they think that, I completely understand it because, I mean, you're without Zach Frazier and you're facing arguably what has been this year the best defensive lineman in football. So I get it. So that would be the one argument I would say. If they didn't use it last week, though, and I thought they would have because, again, I thought, you know, you think about Quinnen Williams and Will McDonald and what they were facing last week and those linebackers, and you say, okay, you'd want to give them some cheese, and they did. So I'm also wondering if maybe it's – and I hadn't thought about this previously until then, but as Russ kind of talked about settling into the game, I kind of wonder if Russ has to get his legs under him. You know, when we're talking about the rust factor and everything? Does he just kind of have to figure, you know, this out first before a Justin Fields package really makes sense? Because, you know, we're pulling Russ out for those four plays. I mean, that disrupts his rhythm. That disrupts everything. So maybe you don't want to ruin that just yet. And I think that's part of it, too. I don't think you necessarily want to take Russ out of the rhythm of things, because you saw what rhythm he built up against New York, against the Jets. So I think that's part of it, too. And again, if, like, as I said, if his arm, and I don't think his arm is necessarily dead yet, if it's not dead and he needs to get more confidence back in his leg to drive through that, that's going to take time and reps. So that's something to think about.
And the other thing, too, and, you know, I kind of fell in love with Fields' athleticism in the first six games and what he was able to do when the play broke down. But not only when you take Russell Wilson out of the game does it disrupt the flow and potentially a rhythm that he's in. To me, if I'm the opposing defense, it really telegraphs things, what the Steelers are trying to accomplish when Justin Fields enters the game as the quarterback that hasn't been starting the whole game.
I mean, they can't throw with Justin. It just doesn't make sense right now to do a Justin package, I guess. That's the thing. Now, when they go later in the year, and if they see something against, I don't know, the Chiefs or the Eagles, and they think that Justin can add a dynamic element and something that they need, I think that's a different story. But I think when Russ is going to be in the second game and you're against the Giants, who I don't think you should need really anything fancy to beat the Giants. Let's be real here. This team is not a good football team. I just don't see the need for it. So it's kind of where it is.
Nick Faribault, PennLive.com with us. Najee Harris has looked, to me, the best he's had in his 4 years in a Steeler uniform behind an offensive line that has been injury ridden and is riding with some young guys. What maybe have you seen differently at a Najee Harris that you might not have seen in the past, and talk a little bit about how what he's been able to do the last couple of weeks has just boded so well for the Steelers' offensive success.
I don't know. He's just creating so much for them. He has 15 broken tackles in the past 2 weeks. I mean, that's a pretty absurd narc. Leads the NFL over the past 2 weeks by like four missed tackles forced. And so I think he had seven against the Raiders, and then he had eight this week. That is prime creating by a running back. Like, when you go back and watch that Raiders game, it wasn't like the offensive line was like clearing lanes out. Najee just had all this room to go. I mean, that touchdown run against the Raiders was literally all him. It was all him. I thought, you know, this game against the Jets, it was a little bit more, you know, collaborative. I thought the O-line did well in that game. But Najee has been just unreal in space. I think this is the kind of thing I was pointing to earlier in the year was, you know, he never had an opportunity to get into space. They didn't give him a chance to get into space. He would get the ball and get hit, you know, before he could even get to the line of scrimmage. It would be loss of two. And so, you know, I remember just watching the tape, and I'm like, how do you expect him to do anything? He would make people miss and then get hit again. Like, okay, he makes someone miss 1 yard behind the line, then gets tackled right again. There's like four people right before he can even get a head of steam going. Like, and I think recently the O-line and the blocking schemes have at least allowed him to get downhill and kind of get something going and start to get into space. Like you saw on his first big run of the game, right, where he bounces it outside, gets in space on a DB. Like, he's going to win that almost every time. DB's not bringing down Najee Harris. He just runs really hard between the tackles. When he gets going, even, you know, 3-4 yards, he just runs and keeps going, always falls forward. And so I think you're just kind of seeing a better utilization of him. I think Arthur Smith is kind of figuring out how to use Najee and Jaylen Warren, to that matter. I think both of them had their best usage by far in this Jets game. The Steelers' O-line is still rough, but I just think they're utilizing Najee better and getting him into spots where he's more comfortable to make these plays happen. He's more comfortable reading his offensive line. And so I think that's the big thing. Now, Najee's looked awesome these last 2 weeks, better than he had all season. But I just think you're kind of seeing what I thought was going on the first 5 weeks was he just wasn't getting opportunities in space. If you – any running back that gets hit, you know – 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage, unless they're prime Barry Sanders, really isn't going to make anything happen. So I'm not surprised by this at all. Najee looked great this summer, and as long as they keep utilizing him like this, I think he's going to have more good games.
Defensively, 13 points allowed against the Raiders, 15 against the Jets. Pretty good for NFL standards, and obviously they win both of those games. But especially on Sunday, a lot of missed tackles, especially from guys like Patrick Queen. I saw a couple from Peyton Wilson as well, despite him, I think, leading the team in tackles. Are you still concerned about maybe some of the defenders, especially at inside linebacker, kind of over-pursuing on the ball?
I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about the defense against top offenses. I don't think we've seen them truly tested in this game. Listen, they have 8 turnovers in the last 3 weeks. I think this team has done a nice job of creating turnovers, but they're also kind of living off turnovers. I think, you know, there's one thing about creating turnovers and there's a thing about kind of living off them. Listen, the pass rush has just been completely neutralized the past 4 weeks. It's not because the guys aren't winning up front. It's because teams are getting the ball out quicker than they ever have against the Steelers. Over the last 4 weeks since that Colts game, if you look at Dallas, Indianapolis, Las Vegas, and New York Jets, guys are getting the ball out in like 2.57 seconds. It's the fastest in that span over the league. Like, the Steelers continue to fall in like pressure rate. They're not getting as many sacks. And it's not because the guys are up front or losing, right? Like, look what Alex Highsmith did to Tyron Smith all Sunday night. I mean, he was completely dominating that matchup. The Steelers kind of just do a few things. They don't really create pressure. They don't create unblocked pressure. I think that's a big thing, right? Like, you don't see TJ Watt flying off the edge unblocked. You don't see Patrick Queen coming through the A-gap unblocked. And that's how you create quick pressure. And the reason why these guys are being asked to tackle in space as much is just because these quarterbacks are getting it out, so they can't win with four, right? You're just not going to get wins that quickly with four. So the Steelers have to figure out a way to get their blitzes going or to blitz more. Like, they don't need to be a top 10 blitz team. They don't need to be, you know, Brian Flores' Vikings right now, but they should at least be middle of the pack. It's hurting what they're doing right now. I think they're asking their linebackers to do a lot, putting a lot of stress on these guys in space. The DBs are being asked to tackle. They're doing a fine job, but I think, you know, when you face better teams, like, you know, when you face a Patrick Mahomes, this isn't going to fly. So they're going to have to figure out some things. Yeah, the missed tackles is the player thing, and I think that's going to be the big thing to fix. But, you know, even the communication stuff, when people are like, well, the communication's fixed, it's been better, but also Aiden O'Connell and Aaron Rodgers got the ball out in a combined 2.4 seconds. I mean, you don't really have to communicate that much when the, you know, he's going to the flat. I mean, as long as you have the guys, you're good, and they've done a better job. But I am concerned about the defense a little bit. Just because I'm not sure the schematics are picking them up. I think talent-wise, I think they're more than good. I think they're more than capable. They have some ills, yes, I understand. But the schematics on defense, I don't think are giving them the best chance to maximize the talent right now.
Another thing on defense, too, and Mike Tomlin had some pretty high praise, at least I thought today, for Joey Porter Jr., who has had a pretty solid start to his second year, but has a tough matchup on Monday against a pretty darn good young receiver, Malik Nabers, who Mike Tomlin had good praise for as well. Is that a matchup where they could find some success, the Giants, you think? And your thoughts on Joey Porter Jr. here before we let you go.
Yeah, Joey Porter Jr. has been solid. I think sometimes he's a roller coaster ride up and down. Some reps, I think he's like unfocused. But he's pretty fun when he's on, man. I thought he had a really good game against the Jets. He got everything that they had. He was covering Devontae and Garrett Wilson. It didn't really matter who came at him. He took both of them, and he took them to the woodshed. They didn't really get anything on them. Nabers is interesting because he's kind of the type of receiver that Joey has struggled against in the past. He's kind of quick twitch route runner types. That's Malik Nabers. You know, I think of like Joey's game last year against Amari Cooper, where he kind of struggled in that, you know, 13-10 slog they lost in Cleveland. So I'm interested to see how that'll go. I want to see his growth in that area. I think Joey's biggest thing is going to actually be kind of showing what he can do in zone coverage, because they played a lot of zone, you know, a lot of cover three stuff. He's still pressed up a lot, but it's been a lot of cover three, and recently they started mixing the quarters, the six, the cover twos, the Tampa twos, different things like that. And he's been, you know, stressed in zone, and I think that was his weakness coming out of school. I think he's getting better at it, so we'll see. I think he's having a solid second year. I think it's been up and down at times, but he had a great week last week. And when you can rise to the occasion against a guy like Devontae Adams, You know, I think that's always a good sign. I think him and versus Neighbors is going to be a fun matchup. But I think the Steelers, you know, when they face a guy like Neighbors or Adams, whoever, should actually be pretty confident in Joey in most of those games.
Steelers and Giants, Monday Night Football, final game before the bye. He's Nick Faribault, PennLive.com, covers the Steelers. Nick, I appreciate you hopping on the program, my friend. Go get yourself a Dangerous. I saw your boy Smitty had a review of it. I didn't get a chance to watch it. I don't know if you didn't saw what he thought of it and what you think of the Russell Wilson sandwich at Permane's.
I haven't, but when I get a chance to try it, Jack, I will make sure to text you.
All right.
And we can discuss it next time I come on or whenever, man. So
yeah, I might try and get one before the Monday night game, and I will be at the Monday night game, and we might be able to talk about it there. So again, appreciate you hopping on, my man, and have a good night.
Thanks for having me on, Jack, as always.
All right, he's Nick Faribault, PennLive.com, breaking down the Steelers. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk more about your Pittsburgh Steelers, get you an update, too, on Pitt Hoops while we're at it. Scrimmage against Point Park tonight. They're up 78-52, 8:15 to go in the ball game. Ishmael Leggett, 21 points. Jalen Lowe, 20. Cam Corwin, the Florida State transfer, has 14. Guys off the bench, Damian Dunn, Brandon Cummings, Papa Conte getting some time in as well, and then Jorge Diaz-Graham. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Pitt Hoop squad, Pitt football, with my grandpa Bill Hillgrove at 9:20-ish as the Pitt Panthers get set to take on Syracuse. Also, too, tomorrow morning, I believe, 10 a.m., Alan Green being introduced as the new athletic director at the University of Pittsburgh, taking over for Heather Lyk, who was fired a couple of months ago. We talk about that, too, if you want it, 412-928-9370. I'm an open book tonight, Joel Nelson. He'll take your calls. We'll talk about whatever the hell you want. It's the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jack Hillgrove. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Jack Hillgrove with you on the Fan Evening Show. It's Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Nick Faribault joining us on the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Talking about this week against the Giants and Russell Wilson's performance against the Jets. One of the things, too, that Mike Tomlin talked about today, as we get into the Giants a little bit, Dexter Lawrence is a problem, was the exact quote. And you look at Dexter Lawrence's numbers this year, near the top of the league, if not at the top of the league in sacks. I mean, he's really good and a cog in the middle of that Giants defense that teams would absolutely love to have. One of the few bright spots on the Giants. 9 sacks, first in the league. And you have that against Ryan McCollum at center, who Mike Tomlin gave a quote-unquote double thumbs up for in his performance against the Jets on Sunday. And Quinnen Williams is a tough player on the inside, too, and the offensive line handled him well. But Dexter Lawrence against Ryan McCollum is something that I anticipate being a problem. And really one of the only problems I think the Steelers will have on Monday night against the Giants. Mike Tomlin also talked about Daniel Jones and his ability to run the football. And I thought, really? I mean, I knew he was an athletic kind of poor man's Josh Allen, can big body that can move a little bit at quarterback. And, you know, you look at what he's done amongst quarterbacks, 50 rushing attempts, which is fifth amongst quarterbacks in the NFL this season, 184 rushing yards for Daniel Jones, eighth amongst quarterbacks this season, but he doesn't have a rushing touchdown. So to me, I'm thinking, well, it doesn't really jump off the page at you. Yeah, attempts, they'll use them, top 10 in the league amongst QBs, and yards, top 10 in the league amongst QBs. But you look at what the Steelers have faced. For the most part, Kirk Cousins, Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott, Aiden O'Connell, Aaron Rodgers, non-factors when it comes to running the football, being dual threat. They held Bo Nix to 4 carries and 25 yards. The Steelers' defense that day was awesome. He was their rushing leader. And Anthony Richardson, who obviously got hurt in that game, 3 carries for 24 yards, and started to move the football a little bit, but that's his MO. And Anthony Richardson, at least I think, is a hell of a lot more athletic at that position than Daniel Jones is. So to base what you saw in that game and how they handled Anthony Richardson off of how the Steelers might handle Daniel Jones on Monday, I think is a little unfair for a guy like Anthony Richardson. So I say that to say, nice of Mike Tomlin to call Daniel Jones and his ability to run the football something that they have to look out for and something I believe he has to keep his eye on. I'm not really keeping my eye on it. I mean, Daniel Jones has been one of the more disappointing quarterbacks in the NFL for where he was drafted for the majority of his career. If I had to place a wager on it, the Giants will probably draft a quarterback in the first round and kind of rid themselves of Daniel Jones. I mean, they're 2-5 right now. Jones, 6 touchdowns to 4 interceptions, a completion percentage of 62.5%. It's not good, but it's definitely, it's not bad, but it's definitely not good. And they've got a shiny new Odell-like receiver in Malik Nabers. And I say Odell-like because obviously prime Odell in the Giants uniform is pretty darn good. They're going to want a shiny new quarterback, at least I think, to pair with Malik Nabers. So Daniel Jones doesn't scare me. What worries me a tad, and Nick Faribault talked about it, was Malik Nabers and the way he plays the position might cause Joey Porter Jr. some fits, and Dante Jackson's a little banged up. So that's something to definitely keep your eye on if you're a Steelers fan. And Dexter Lawrence in the middle of that Giants defense against guys like Mason McCormick, a rookie, and Ryan McCollum, a rookie. Now, Isaac Seumalo on that interior as well. He's gotten better as the season has gone on, and he's, you know, I think one of the better interior offensive linemen in the league. But for the most part, I'm okay with Monday night against the Giants a week from yesterday. I'm okay with what they bring to the table and how the Steelers can handle it. Talked a lot in the first hour about Russell Wilson and his ability to throw the football against the Jets, who I don't think, or yes, against the Jets. These New York teams, Jolie, they're getting me confused. Back-to-back weeks, night games. Against the Jets, Russell Wilson threw the football well enough to where I think that the Jets have a little bit more to be scared of in the secondary than the Giants do, especially with Adoree Jackson, one of their top corners, banged up a little bit. He's questionable, I believe. And the only other guy really that's kind of jumping off the page for me in that secondary is the former Panther, Jason Pinnock, who's having pretty darn good season for the Giants. Drafted in the 5th round in 21, played in all 7 games, 3 sacks, no interceptions, but a pass breakup. And then last year, 2 sacks, 6 pass breakups, 2 forced fumbles, and 2 interceptions. So Pinnock has kind of found a little bit of a home with the Giants, which is pretty cool to see from a former Panther. But yeah, I don't see anything from the Giants that jumps off the page for me in that secondary as worrisome, which is why I think the Steelers can replicate an offensive performance like they did against the Jets. The big key to doing so, being able to run the football, and Ryan McCollum being able to hold his water against a guy like Dexter Lawrence, who's been tops in the league when it comes to being able to penetrate through an offensive line and get tackles for loss and sacks. So that'll be something to keep an eye on, and surely Mike Tomlin is throughout the week as well. Fan Evening Show will roll along momentarily. Coming up at 9:20, Bill Hillgrove, my grandpa, will join us fresh from the Pitt basketball exhibition, which is nearing end. Inside a minute to go, and the Panthers have widened the lead exponentially. 93-2, and as I say that, I refresh. 93-59, 34 seconds to go in the ballgame. Jalen Lowe, 22 points on 7 for 13 shooting. Ishmael Leggett leading the way with 24 on 8 for 9 shooting. Leggett 3 for 3 from beyond the arc. And it looks like a lot of guys got into the lineup as this one wrapped up. So we'll get his thoughts on that. And, of course, the big matchup on Thursday. Pitt, Syracuse, the Panthers look to stay undefeated. So all of that and more. And your phone calls if you choose to call in on any of the topics at 412-928-9370. PetFest 2024 presented by Subaru is back October 27th at Rockwell Park in the East End. 9:30 in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You can bring your four-legged friend to meet vendors, animal shelters, participate in costume contests, and get your photos with Santa, or join the Blessing of the Pets at 9:30 a.m. Pet Fest brought to you by Point Breeze Veterinary Clinic, Shendorovich and Fishman, and EV True Value Hardware. For more information on it, it's at 937thefan.com. I'm Jack Hillgrove. The Fan Evening Show rolls along next. Jolie, my same-game parlay, I think, in decent shape right now. For NBA opening night, Celtics up 80-57 over the Knicks, 10-17 to go in the third quarter. I had already hit Tatum to score 20+, Derek White for 2 made threes. Celtics money line is in there. Again, that's looking solid. Don't want to jinx myself, but it's looking solid. I need 4 rebounds from Al Horford and 10 more points from Jalen Brunson. Actually, I think I might need less than 10. Did he just score? No, I do. He has 15. I need 10 more points from Jalen Brunson and 4 rebounds from Al Horford. I think we might be. I'm optimistic. Would you be okay if I called myself optimistic? You look like you might poo-poo on me for a second.
Well, the Celtics lead by just over 20 points. I guess there are still 9 minutes to go in the third quarter. The way it's trending right now is I think both sides would rest their starters for the fourth quarter if it's a 23-point game, probably. So
that's a good point. So we need Brunson to get on the heater.
To get what?
10
points.
And I need,
in the third quarter,
I think Horford has only 2 rebounds. He does. So I need 4. I keep thinking Al Horford's just like that guy, but he's also just 40 years old. And is slowly becoming the Udonis Haslam of the Boston Celtics, I think.
Good for him for finally getting a ring, though, last season.
Oh, yeah, no, that's
isn't
awesome.
That cool?
Yeah, it's really cool. I really like Al Horford. My team on, I think it was like NBA 2K10 or 2K9 was the first one I had, was that Hawks team with like him, Kyle Korver, Jeff Teague, Josh Smith.
Was Mike Bibby there, or was he, was he at Sacramento then, or out of the league?
I think Bibby was on that team. Coming off the bench, maybe. The starting lineup that I messed with was Teague, Korver, Horford, Smith. Oh, who was their small forward? It's going to bother me so bad, and I don't want to look it up.
Was there that one guy who played on...
Joe Johnson.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. He played on Charlotte, the Bobcats.
Yeah, he was one of the best. He was probably the best player on that team. Should have remembered that. So that's looking okay. Did I tell you about my same game parlay last night?
No. Which football game?
Ravens.
I hope it was a winner because there was
a
lot.
I hit big on the Steelers game Sunday night for like close to $300, and I decided to throw $50 to win like close to $600 on the same game parlay. Ravens money line.
Boom.
Over 49.5.
That was easy.
Lamar 200+, which he shattered.
He got that in like the first half.
Yeah. Baker 225+, which he didn't get until garbage time. Well, garbage time. They ended up cutting it to 10, but they had to throw the ball a bunch, so he got that. Justice Hill over 11.5 rushing yards, and he had like 4.
And I know he caught a touchdown of at least 11 or more yards.
And I'm thinking to myself, remember a couple of weeks ago when I was talking about Arthur Smith and, you know, George Pickens' snap count, and I asked Nick Faribault about reduction in snaps for Pickens and Freiermuth based off of Arthur Smith being the head coach in Atlanta, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, all that. When I researched that topic and everybody, you know, all the other teams kind of supporting my claim, Najee Harris not on the field as much, Pat Freiermuth, George Pickens not on the field as much. The only one that didn't to that point, I think it was through week 5, was the Ravens. Because Derrick Henry was like 52% of the snaps. Justice Hill was like 46. And I'm thinking, okay, 11.5 rushing yards. And then I'm thinking to myself, well, he only has 3 in the third quarter. They're killing the Bucs. Garbage time, they're going to take Henry out. because he had 100 and whatever in that long run. I'm thinking he's got to get 8 yards. That's two carries. No. Of course, the Bucs defense, Kalijah Kancey, Servacier Dennis, all those pit boys, cog in the middle, and he had like two rushes for negative yards on that last drive, which I was so mad. I was anchoring last night. Dylan Cleland and Amanda Verrier, our anchor and meteorologist that were there last night, were just laughing. I was so mad in between sportscasts at WTOV. But such is life in sports betting. All right, so Pitt basketball, they win over Point Park 93-62. Jalen Lowe and Ishmael Leggett leading the way. Cam Corin, the Florida State transfer, a double-double, 14-11. Leggett nearly a double-double as well, 24-9. My grandpap joins the program at the top of the hour. The game wrapped up a little bit early. I texted him and said, you want to come on at 9 instead of 9:20? He said, sure. So we're going to do that next. We're going to talk about how he assessed the Panthers against the Pioneers. Small sample size, only one exhibition, I know, but Pitt basketball gets me juiced. It was one of the things that I've loved so dearly as a kid, and the fact that they are competitive again makes me very, very happy. So we'll talk Pitt hoops, and then, of course, Pitt-Syracuse on Thursday night as Kyle McCord and the Orange roll to town. All that with the voice of the Panthers coming up on the Fan Evening Show. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. You can check out the 2024 Silverado 1500 at 1.9% financing up to 36 months with approved credit through GM Financial. Full terms, conditions at sunchevy.com. Low of 55 tonight, high tomorrow, 78.